cognac. Liquid gold in every sip. Yeah. Look at him. Let's play some blues while we all take a little nip. Mellow and whiskey make me wild. Get a couple of glasses and let's get drunk in style. I'm talking about cognac. Careful now, it sneaks up on you strong. No more money, but I got Keith Richard. How about you, Beck? Come on in here now.
Oh, yeah. How about that?
Good stuff.
How'd you like to be hanging out with Buddy Guy, Keith Richards, Jeff Beck at CNS Studios in Western NDG?
West Side. How would I like?
I imagine if they were sitting right here with us, Shane Murphy.
Yeah, I think a little pee would come out. I got a little.
But you opened for Buddy Guy.
I did, yeah.
He's 82. Yeah, he's about on July 30th. He'll be 82 years old. And he shows no sign at all of slowing down. His playing is brilliant. His voice is great. This album is called The Blues is Alive and Well. And it's just every album that he puts out, is better than the last one he puts out. It's very inspiring.
I think he's a lot like B.B. King in the sense that he's he could just be a blues singer. Like if that was a Buddy Guy was the singer in my band, I'd be like, yeah, that's pretty cool. No?
Yeah.
Well, he's great. Scary.
But B.B. King was already had slowed down considerably at 82. I don't think he was... I think he died a couple, like 84, 83, 84, something like that. Maybe 85. He wasn't capable of doing what Buddy Guy is still doing.
Yeah, I mean,
Buddy is nimble. Still goes out into the crowd.
Lean and mean, yeah.
So what was that like? When did you open for him?
I think four years ago.
At Metropolis?
Yeah, that was the first. That was the first bonding experience I had with the infamous Tony Lombardi, because Tony Albino couldn't make the gig, and it was the last.
He had something better to do.
Well, yeah, pretty much.
He was playing with Jordan Officer.
I think he was. You got a good memory. It was Jordan Officer or Gregory Charles or Elvis Presley or somebody. Something was going on. He couldn't make the gig. And and I had been using Tony Lombardi as a sub, and but as everybody does, you go through different stages of experience. So you do X amount of bar gigs and club gigs, and then you get that call like a opening for Buddy Guy, where all of a sudden the pressure becomes very heavy, very quick. Like when you get the call, you're like, do you want to open for Buddy Guy? You're like, yeah, of course I do. But that's like saying, you know, Mike Tyson's in town. He needs a sparring partner. Do you want to come and do four rounds with Mike for 400 a round? You're like, yeah, but
with headgear.
Yeah, but it's more about, you know, it was more about getting through the gig. Anyways, long story short, Tony Lombardi did that gig with me, and it was...
Well, I remember what was cool about that is that it was a full house when you guys hit the stage, because very often, you know, when people know there's an opener... they're out. They arrive late.
Yeah.
And I remember Tony. I don't know if he did it leaving the stage or walking on the stage. He took a photo on his phone.
Yeah.
Of the crowd.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was a big thrill, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah, so I was more nervous for him, and he's not a guy who really gets nervous. So whether it's nine people or, I mean, now I know him. We play. You know, it's been like four nights a week together playing. I spend more time with him than I do any other human being for the last, you know, 2 or 3 years. So I know that he's, what's a good word? Not inscrutable, unshakable. He's very stoic.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's a good quality.
He played his ass off. Yeah, it's a very, especially when I'm not like that in those situations. I am more now, I'm more calm. But back then when a lot of changes in the band and whatnot, it's nerve wracking. So I was a bag of nerves, and his buddy Guy, and of course he had Johnny Lang come. And I remember there was one point where it was me, Buddy, and Johnny Lang just standing side stage, and I was like, "Just be cool."
I forgot about the Johnny Lang part. Yeah,
act like you've been there before. And that was I tried to.
Did you? But was there any interaction?
Yeah, just pleasantries. You know, weather sure is crazy. Yeah, the roads are weird here, that type of stuff. But I wasn't like, could I?
You didn't talk to him about smoke meat or anything. Apparently he's always at Dunn's.
Yeah,
whenever he's in Montreal.
No, I didn't. Like I said, I've had the luck, the good fortune to open with some pretty big names. You know, Derek Trucks and Adele and Buddy Guy and John Mayall. And really, they're on tour and they're tired and they don't need. They have an opening.
John Mayall just had to cancel.
He did
a lot of dates. Yeah, apparently he's not doing well. Yeah, he's also way up.
But
there,
he was 78 when I opened for him, and he was jumping around like a madman. He played for an hour and 15 minutes, and did like a half an hour of encore. So, I mean, it's unfortunate that things come to an end, but pretty good ride.
That's
pretty good ride.
And he was the father of British blues, basically.
Yeah, of course.
Right?
Yeah, gave a great performance, and you know, great career. So.
Is this episode 13 of the Melnick and Murphy podcast?
Yeah.
Are you superstitious at
Black
all?
I like
the number 13. Whenever I played, I always asked for jersey number 13.
I'm superstitious because of my my parents. You know, knock the salt over, you know, pick it up and
throw it over your shoulder.
Right hand, left shoulder. Yeah. Black cat. My dad's like, Jesus Christ, black cat. God damn it, you know? So a little bit, you know, the Irish superstition, yeah. But Friday the 13th, I mean, no, not really. A little bit. Like, I don't walk on, you walk under ladders and shit like that?
I'm oblivious. Sometimes I walk down the street, I'm so locked in and focused on what I'm about to do. Usually it's heading into work or something. And, mm-hmm. you know, very often I actually, you know, walk right by people, think I'm an asshole, which may be the case, but it's because I'm focused, you know, and I'm in another world.
Walk under a ladder.
No, but if I see it, I won't go under it. But I'm sure I've gone under it without thinking twice. Yeah, I don't do that. You know, people step over cracks on the sidewalk, and I don't have any. When I was a kid, I had a lot of superstitions. I used to watch hockey games a certain way. When the Montreal Canadiens were losing 8 games a year, I thought it was because of
your
the
fault.
Way. Yeah, it was like, why would I change? They win every night.
Yeah,
and but then I realized that's kind of silly. It's just silly. It's a silly thing.
But then you don't know. The universe works in mysterious ways.
I want to thank Lorne Rubin, Paramount Financial Services, who is the title sponsor of the Melnick and Murphy podcast here at CNS Studios in Western NDG with Tony Colgan and Alan Hodgson helping out. Paramount Financial Services, you need somebody to take care of your money. Lorne's the guy to do it. He's just back from seeing the Foo Fighters. Remember he told us a story of his dad and how much he loves the Foo Fighters. So they went to see him in Ottawa.
Lauren's dad likes the Foo Fighters?
Well, he's passed away. Oh, but it was one of his favorite.
Really?
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. It goes by the song, right? Lauren and his brother Stuart went out to Ottawa. So the Foo Fighters played it on the hill in Quebec City, Plains of Abraham, and they played at the Ottawa Blues Fest. And we didn't get them this time. Paramount Financial Services, 514-905-0876. Another group that was booked to play the Ottawa Blues Fest and hadn't been booked here, and I was really upset about it. I was making plans to go to Ottawa to see the War on Drugs. They were added to close the Jazz Fest in the Quartier du Spectacle. And for me personally, I know next year's the 40th, and apparently Andre Menard is calling it quits after next year. It'll be the 40th. I've attended every Montreal Jazz Fest. Other than back in the day when it wasn't as big as it became, and a lot of shows were at Théâtre Saint-Denis, a venue that I love. I saw Miles Davis there. I saw all the jazz greats there. This, for me, in the last 10 years, was the best jazz fest for me personally as a music fan. And to have the War on Drugs close it out, and I got there. It was a 9:30 show, and I got there at 7:40. So I was about 5 deep in the middle, and I sat on the cement, surrounded by a lot of legs. And then at about 9 o'clock, I stood up.
Anybody smoking jazz cigarettes?
Oh, yeah. And I realized how many people had come up behind me. Like, you couldn't see daylight at all. And I don't know if it was 50,000, 60,000, 40,000, whatever it was. And it was so thrilling to see these guys who I there's a big sound to them. He's a great songwriter. There's a lot going on. And a lot of times a group like that, they don't do it live, but he took it to another level.
Really?
Live, the War on Drugs. Great way to end it. And you were a big part of the Jazz Fest. You were playing at what used to be the main outdoor stage in front of Place des Arts before they built the Quartier du Spectacle.
Rio Tinto stage, I think.
Yeah, and you told us about it on the last podcast, which kind of snuck up on me.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good thing you mentioned it. I wouldn't have known.
Yeah. Well, I'm not social media savvy that way, Mitchell. I had a chance to play with Stéphane Marais, who's a Montreal singer.
She's crazy about you.
Born in...
she is.
Born in... No, she's... She's very cool. She was very, well, very kind to me that night.
And, yeah, in both sets.
Yeah, let me sing a couple of songs, and she's a powerhouse.
People would know her from Brand Van, but yeah, I mean, that's not all, though.
No, she just released an album called Diva. And produced by my friend Pierre-Luc Serra, and it's like Haitian R&B, hip-hop, world music vibe. There's a lot of Creole singing. Very cool album. So PL, because we're working together on my stuff, he said, would you want to come and play some guitar? Because he's playing guitar as well, and bass, and multi-instrumentalist. And he said, we just need you to come and play some Shane Murphy style guitar, and I learned the album, and learned the parts. And
well, it's cool to see you up there.
Yeah.
But so I got to ask you this. I saw both sets.
Mm-hmm.
You made your acoustic sound electric. Number mm-hmm. one, how did you do that? And number two, the electric guitar was on a stand next to you the entire night. I don't think you touched it.
Right. Well, the concept of the album was a lot of acoustic guitars and had a more of a world music slant. And Pierre-Luc felt that it was better if we both played acoustic. Now, my acoustic has been modified by Corey Diabo, who plays with Jonas and has his own band and stuff. And he's, like I mentioned before on the podcast, he's a virtuoso, but he's also a tremendous luthier and guitar mechanic. So I'm lucky enough to have him help me with my gear. And I promise to you right now, I'm going to get back into the slide. I'm going to pull it out. So the concept of this acoustic guitar was to put a pickup in the sound hole in the style of Elmore James, who's my favorite slide guitar player. And so Corey built me like a little custom pickup holder, and we put a Fender Stratocaster pickup in there with a little knob. So it has, it's like a hybrid. So you'll have somewhat of an electric sound, but with the acoustic resonance and the overtones. So that's why it sounds a little bit more hot rodded than normal.
So acoustic. That was cool. So yeah, the electric guitar was a prop.
Well, no, if I broke a string, that's my, okay. You know, the main one. But I the thing is you tend to get carried away with an electric guitar, or at least I do. So it could get more heavy guitar wise than it needed to be had I been playing that instead. So stuck to the acoustic, yeah.
Did you get to see anything, or were you also played at the Bistro Jojo?
Yeah, Bistro Jojo during the Jazz Fest. I'm not like you.
Yeah.
I don't like crowds.
You don't like crowds.
Yeah. Like if I was sitting there for 2 hours and I turned around and there was 50,000 people behind me, like even though you mentioned that, I didn't see how many people came up behind me. Like I don't even like that expression.
Well,
I saw the Funk Brothers and I was in the middle of like...
I'm not good with that. I got to admit, I'm not that good with it. But I really wanted to see these guys, and I had an access to the media tent on the side. It's not the same. It's just not the same experience. But
if I had my own like security detail that would escort me in and out, like whenever I wanted to go to the bathroom.
So what about in the early days of the Jazz Fest? Let's say when Muddy Waters was still alive, would you not have joined the crowd to see Muddy Waters?
Well, I mean, there's certain, like I said, I went to see the Funk Brothers. I went to see, you know, certain bands that really would, you know, turn me on, that I would check it out. But other than that, it's just what's the word when you're afraid of crowds? Agoraphobic?
I don't know.
Xenophobic?
Xenophobic.
What's xenophobic?
Xenophobic would be Donald Trump, maybe a little Don Cherry.
Oh, okay, not xenophobic. Okay. so not, I'm not xenophobic. Just the crowds freak me out.
That's interesting.
The porta potties, all that stuff. I'm just not, I can't.
All right. Since Buddy Guy mentioned Muddy Waters, let's go to a classic, and you'll figure out the theme for today's podcast. This is some classic live Muddy Waters at a club in Chicago, near the end of his career, actually, produced by Johnny Winter.
Bring me champagne when I'm on a guitar. And bring me a reaper when I want to get high. Bring me champagne when I want to get drunk. Bring me a reaper when I want to get high. Lonely and celebrate down here by my side. You should be allowed to people rest people because these smoke a little dope. cause people wanna smoke a little dope. Well, you know, it's good for your head, it's good for your body. It makes you relax, don't you know?
Speaking about wanting to be in a small club, huh? That is from Money, Mississippi.
Thank you very much. Oh, boy, what a good night we're having tonight.
Waters.
Live. So that was recorded right after, it came out after the last Waltz performance. It was his last album. The original.
So that was a club in Chicago that did that.
I'm guessing it was a club in Chicago.
The Checker Club or something.
I don't know. I don't know where it was recorded. I'm assuming it was Chicago. And
Keith and Mick jump up on stage.
No, that's no.
Different one?
Different one.
Okay.
Yeah, I know that one.
Okay.
And Johnny Winter produced it, won a Grammy. Pine Top Perkins is on there.
Luther Allison?
Luther Allison, I don't know.
He's
on guitar. Luther Johnson.
Okay.
Luther Johnson on guitar. Jerry Point. Noy on a harmonica. Money, Mississippi, Blues, Waters, Live, Champagne and Reefer. You've done that song.
I still do it. Yeah. Give me champagne when I'm when I'm thirsty, baby. Make your mouth a little dry.
Do you remember the first time you heard Muddy Waters?
Yes. I was listening to CKUT.
CKUT? How about that? Nice shout out.
Yeah. CKUT, I was... maybe 16, 15. And it was, I forget the name of the song. People call me a Rolling Stone, but I'm just a man without a home. And I was like, what is this? And ended up playing it at the walkathon for my high school. And the PA crapped out. and the drummer got up from the stage and just left because he was pissed off. And so began my history with drummers at a young age.
I was thinking of one
Eddie O'Tony.
I was thinking of one of your old drummers today because you had mentioned, and we'll do this on the next podcast when we're going to have a guest with us. It's about time we had a musical guest.
Spice things up.
That you had just heard Alejandro Escovedo, an Escovedo song from a few years ago, right?
Yeah.
I mentioned it to Lloyd Fischler of Billy Bob Productions, that Shane is just getting into this song by Escovedo. He'd never heard it before, right? Always a Friend.
Yeah.
And he said, doesn't he remember that he opened for Alejandro at one of our shows?
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
At Cafe Campus.
Yeah.
And I remember you guys opening, but I remember your drummer, Bobby. He wasn't impressed with the Escovedo set, and he left. He kind of shook his head. And went, eh.
I have no comment.
But that was
like
who
how
it was.
Trying
right?
to bait me here.
One of 28 drummers that Shane has employed over the years, but Alejandro Escovedo is an incredible talent that has gone criminally underappreciated through the years. I think one of the problems is his name. People see
xenophobes.
That's right. People see or hear Escovedo. If he had changed his name, maybe it'd have been more popular. But people can't get by that. It's like early on, I know some people who couldn't deal with the Grateful Dead simply because of their name. It was so stupid.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, the logo is a bit ominous with like the skull and everything, and I get that, but I don't know.
Try listening.
Yeah. Well, you know? People don't like to do that, Mitch. People like it spoon-fed, you know? They don't have to dig deep. They want it just on a platter.
So the Escovedo song that you liked.
Yeah, what album is that from? Is it Real Animal?
That might have been the title track, but it's from a few years ago. He hasn't been in Montreal since he closed the Jazz Fest with a free show when he was... for a brief period of time, he was managed by John Landau, who's Springsteen's manager.
Sure.
And they loved him so much, they wanted to try to get him to the next level, and it didn't happen. And Springsteen joined him. He joined Springsteen on stage for a couple of shows during the tour of that album, which featured that single. And he almost died.
He was ill, right?
Yeah, he was very ill, no health insurance. Everybody in Austin, Texas came out to support him, pay his bills for him. And he's mid-60s. He's still out on the road, still heading for another joint. And one of my all-time favorite artists, great songwriter. And came out of the punk movement, actually.
I was down in Niagara-on-the-Lake a couple of days ago with my buddy Tupper.
Andrew Tupper?
Yeah, played rhythm guitar with me for a couple of years. And then he's playing this song, and I'm like, what is this song? This is they just all of a sudden within the first 10 seconds you know you like this song and you want it to end so you can start it from the beginning again.
Right.
And it turned out that it was a sound guy who was the chief sound man at Dakota Tavern named Johnny Bora, who played in Change of Heart. He would EQ the PA with that song, so he would put it up, and so Tupper was bartending and he heard it a bunch of times, and so he plays it, and we were driving around in his car, and I'm like, who is this? And he's like, Alejandro Escovedo. I was like, oh, yeah. I know that guy. Yeah.
Brilliant dresser. Incredible dresser. One of the best dressed
Tupper?
Men yeah, he's in rock always, and roll. Alejandro Escovedo.
Oh, okay.
We're going to talk about Alejandro on our next podcast. Let me get back to this one. You ever been to the Hammerhead Bar?
No.
There might or might not be a place called the Hammerhead Bar in Florida. I'm guessing it would be in Florida.
Okay.
And, well, let Mike Scott tell you all about it from the Water Boys.
Whistler's place, it was like a scene from a dream. tarantulas, drapes, magic mushroom cakes, sharks hanging from the beams. Dave Ruffian was there with a sad-eyed girl, the son of Ringo Starr. It was a night like any other, man, at the Hammerhead, the Hammerhead. Bellied roadies from Uriah Heep were comparing stomach tattoos. Two had Satan, one had Tom Payton, one had a belt-shaped bruise. In a spotlit corner, a famous DJ was showing a starlet his scars. Yeah, it was all for one and one for all, like the Hammerhead, the Hammerhead. Drinks under the eye of the ox. The first sect of the second, about the third, she's as square as a f***ing box. Fifth Stancil turned up on cue with a pickled skull in a jar. There was always something intriguing to do at the Hammerhead, the Hammerhead. Grandee, Sir Buff Fairbairn Smart. They're dressed like a cross between Robert the Bruce and Napoleon Bonaparte. He's busy murdering Billy Joe Wells, just the way you are. It was business as usual, sunny boys, at the Hammerhead, the Hammerhead. Stroke of midnight, Whistler said, "Let us now toast the deceased." And he sank his snout in a stained glass keg of alcohol and yeast. Nine Lithuanian dancing girls, each sucking a fat cigar, and jitterbugged along the beer-strewn top of the Hammerhead, the Hammerhead. Days are gone, those dancing days of bacchanal, of drink. Whistler sleeps with mermaids, groupies are extinct. The famous DJ is doing time for acts nude and bizarre, and only dust remains of the Hammerhead, the Hammerhead.
How about that? That is Mike Scott and the Waterboys. Do you like the Waterboys?
I think that's the oddest song I've ever heard.
It's a brand new Waterboys release.
You're kidding.
It's a double album. It's called Out of the Blue.
Are you joking?
No, and they played the Corona, and I missed it because the Canadians were playing that night. I had to work the hockey game. And
Waterboys, Fisherman's Blues.
Yes, the Waterboys. Mike Scott went solo for a while, but he has the group back together. It's Mike Scott.
That's a very odd song.
Hammerhead Bar. There is a Hammerhead Bar that exists. The Hammerhead Beach Bar on South Fletcher Avenue in Fernandina Beach in Florida.
Road trip. Robert De Bruce. You know who Robert De Bruce was?
No.
You remember seeing Braveheart?
I saw the movie, but I don't remember too many details.
He was the guy that turned his back at the last minute on William Wallace.
I don't know. You know, I try not to remember anything associated with Mel Gibson, you know? I'm just trying to find out where.
I'm just saying. I said Braveheart. I didn't say Mel Gibson. I was just saying it was a movie.
Mel Gibson, yeah.
It's not far from We're for Jesus House of Prayer in Florida. I'm trying to find out where this is.
We could get lost and then get saved.
Fernandina Beach, Florida. Where the hell is this? Amelia by the Sea. Do you know Amelia? Do you know Florida at all?
No, been to Florida once.
So here's a once.
Yeah, Club Med. Sandpiper Club Med, yeah.
Was that a working holiday or
it was a pleasure trip?
Pleasure trip,
but we couldn't swim in it. It's on a, I forget the name of the river. It's on an, I think it's the estuary. Anyways, it's like brackish water, half salt water, half fresh water, and we couldn't go swimming because of the crocodiles. So we had to stay in. Sorry, alligators. We had to stay in the had to stay in the calm pool.
Is it a resort pool as opposed to, and the ocean is right there and you can't even swim?
Well, I mean you could, but I don't need to see too many signs saying swim at your own risk, you know?
Yeah, I don't.
You like going in the ocean?
I love it. I love swimming in the ocean, not just going in the ocean.
It's the best.
And I'm aware of all of the sharks that are around me while I'm swimming, and I just don't think about it. And so back when I was younger, I would not have done that.
Little Jaws?
Well, when Jaws came out, I was afraid to take a bath.
Robert Shaw.
Cold. That was incredible when that movie came out.
74.
Cold eyes, a doll's eyes, and they roll over black.
That was a great movie. It's a really great movie.
Dreyfuss and Shaw.
And
Roy Scheider.
Roy Scheider. He was great in that. So here's a loaded question for you.
Steven Spielberg was how old when he directed that?
14.
26.
You say that as if it's a fact, so I'm not even going to question it.
I knew that it was Spielberg, and I was like, how old was Spielberg when he did it? And he was 26 years old.
Imagine that.
Yeah, no, that's, I couldn't tie my shoelaces when I was 26.
That's a Hall of Famer right there, you know? It's like when you make your debut as an 18-year-old, like Bobby Orr.
Yeah.
You know? So here's a loaded question for you. Your favorite bar that features either live music or recorded music you know, those places that may not have live music, but you know when you go in there, the music that exists, whether it's a DJ or it's just somebody's, account, iTunes account, the music is great through the years.
Oh, man.
Favorite bar.
I used to love going to Mad Hatter's on Metcalf before it moved the original location when Ben's was still on the
Ben's.
Corner. Yeah, we were like 18, 19, and there was a DJ named Jake. And used to play like Black Flag and Blondie, and every time we go in there, it'd be a hoot. Be like, what's this song? What's that song? My love is real. My love is real. Bastard in love. Henry Rollins. Sorry, pardon my language. Sorry, Lauren. So I would say that left an impression on me going like,
Do you remember the mustache on Lambert Kloss? It was Klossy back in the day. It was right across from the Forum. A lot of bikers, that was more of a live music venue, but it was also kind of a bar. I don't know. There's a place, it no longer exists. My favorite bar that I've been in New York, it was right next to the Beacon Theater. So going to a lot of shows at the Beacon, right next door, there was a bar, it was called Yogi's. And it had the wood chips on the floor and had a jukebox. It was not a live music venue, but there were people 3-4 deep. But it was a very typical New York bar with hot barmaids. And
ask for a single and you get a triple?
Yes. Especially
every
before
third
a show.
Drink, every
That's
third
right.
drink is free. The bartender knocks on the bar.
Invariably some guy would be nodding off because he's had so much to drink before the show, and they'd spritz him with the Coke or the.
Come on.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I saw that. Get out of here. You know, there's people.
If you're narcoleptic, ladies and gentlemen, don't go to New York.
And there was always, it was a great mixture of Johnny Cash and punk, and then another alt country. Joe Ely was big at the time. It's Ely. I think it's Ely.
Okay.
Yeah. And then we go see the Allman Brothers. And I remember one time I was so hammered.
You're not a big drinker, though.
Well, back in the day.
Okay.
Yeah. But I don't get.
No, but when we're out together, and I'm like, "Do you want to do a shot?" You're like, "You'll do a shot," but you sort of have, begrudgingly. You're like, "Oh,
I've done it. I've done it." You know, I had my fun.
Okay.
And back in the day, that's. I was so drunk on one particular night, and I didn't have a great seat for the Almonds. I was off to the side, and I couldn't really see Warren Haynes. You know, I want to see Warren Haynes and Derek Trucks on guitar, and I couldn't really see. I felt detached because my headspace. I went back to the bar. I mean, I must have seen like less than half of the Allman Brothers. I went back to Yogi's Bar and just finished up there.
So is that your favorite bar to listen to music to?
Music there's a bar called the Niagara, owned by Jesse Mallon, who's a New York rocker. It's on the Lower East Side, across from Tompkins Square Park. Big mural of Joe Strummer on the side of the wall there. That's a pretty good bar.
That's
Montreal,
the best, though, when there's a really good jukebox.
Yeah.
I remember I was in Ohio. We were playing Kent State University, and we were in this bar, and the jukebox was just awesome. They had, like, the meters and all this bunch of New Orleans stuff that you never... I mean, the culture is just different down there, right? Like, the radio stations, everything's just... They're steeped in that.
Well, I grew up, as you did, back to Lambert Clossy, is where Moe's was, the original Moe's, and they had those mini jukeboxes, like the Green Spot in St. Henry. They got the mini jukeboxes. Unfortunately, they don't work, but...
A lot of Celine Dion. My heart will go on.
Pierre LeBrun's a big jukebox guy. When he's on the road, he takes over the jukebox. Like, he stands guard.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There's a certain etiquette. No, he'll make sure, though, that he doesn't, you know, that his, he throws in, like, a lot of money.
Is he a guardian or is he a hogger?
People who hang out with Pierre... I've done it once, but people know that he's got very good and very taste in rock and roll. So you let him.
Is he a guardian? Or he's a hogger. Okay.
Yeah. It's whatever.
Fair. Okay.
He stays late. He has a good time. Pierre LeBrun has a good time.
That's good.
On the road. So I asked Shane, I said, we're going to do a podcast about alcohol. What's your favorite drinking song? And he went, oh, man.
Yeah.
So we're about to hear one of your favorite drinking songs, and why?
Are we doing the Teddy song?
Yeah.
I got, I heard this album, a friend of mine played this album, songs from Venice Beach, and Ted Hawkins was a guy who was busking and discovered by, I forget what record company it was. Anyways, tremendous singer, and I bought the album, and I heard this song. There Stands the Glass, and he did a bunch of Sam Cooke stuff that I'd never heard. My knowledge of Sam Cooke at that time wasn't really that extensive, and I was like, these, you know, Let the Good Times Roll, and, you know, We're Having a Party, and so he did this song, There Stands the Glass, and it just, it's...
That's a cover of Webb Pierce, an old country artist from the 50s,
Yeah, so enjoy.
The glass that will ease all my pain, that will settle my brain, is my first one today. There stands the glass that will drown all my fears, that will hide all my tears. Brother, I'm on my way. I'm wondering where you are tonight. I'm wondering if you are all right. I'm wondering, do you think of me in my misery? Glass. Fill it up to the brim till my troubles grow dim. This my first one today. Thank you.
all right. I'm wondering, do you think of me in my misery? There stands a glass, fill it up to the brim, till my troubles grow dim. It's my first one today. There stands the glass.
That is Ted Hawkins covering Webb Pierce. What a voice. What an interesting backstory, too. Like a lot of people, I discovered him after he passed away. I remember it was Al Sleminski, the music man at...
That's where I bought the album.
At Phantasmagoria, who was telling me all about him.
Yeah.
And I just didn't get around to... Actually, he pointed Ted Hawkins out to me, and he was telling me his story. And he didn't have any CDs left. So as he was ordering them, he passed away.
Right.
So I ended up getting my first Ted Hawkins CD, thanks to Al Sleminski, who was, of course, at Envirama Electronic.
Big Al.
4914 Sherbrooke and Westmount. Big music dude. And he it's kind of like a, I don't know if it's a Charles Bradley story, kind of. You know, Charles Bradley was discovered late. Ted Hawkins was discovered very late.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I think he was in his, he was late 50s. And he didn't have a long career from the time he was, quote-unquote, discovered. I think he passed away at 63 or something like that. I got to do the Wikipedia search. But, it's one of those voices that you just, I mean, he must have made a shit ton of money on the boardwalk, because I'd probably give him everything I had in my pockets if walking down the boardwalk and you hear that.
Speaking of Wikipedia, the Hammerhead Beach Bar is north of Jacksonville in Florida.
Okay.
So I don't know if that's the one.
Tom Petty territory.
Mike's.
From Jacksonville, no?
Gainesville. Sorry.
Right again. Must be nice.
Sorry. We have shows coming up. I don't know what we can say. What I can say for sure. Tommy Youngstein's coming back. Tommy Youngstein was supposed to play kind of a Christmas-themed Bruce Springsteen tribute show at the Fairmount Theater. And then Tom Petty passed away. Mm-hmm. So it turned into a Petty tribute, and it was a great night. It was you guys, the Bad Starters, opened up, and it was a really cool night. And so they're coming back to the Fairmount Theater on Friday, November 30th, with a full-on Springsteen tribute show. More details later. This is unofficial. We can tell you that it's happening, but details to be announced later. Is this a joke? Do you listen to Tony Marinaro in the Montreal Forum?
Sure. I do.
That's one of Tony's catchphrases, right? Yeah. Is this a joke? Is this a joke?
Yeah.
No, it's a roast. Billy Bob Productions presents an all-star Montreal roast of Tony Marinaro at Club Soda on Thursday, September the 27th. And again, stay tuned for all the details in terms of tickets and who's going to be on. A lot of people from music and comedy and, of course, sports and the media in Montreal. We're going to see if Tony can take it as well as he dishes it out.
I like it when Tony plays Italian tunes and sings along. I get a big kick out of that.
We plan on having Tony sing with whichever the group is that you're fronting that night.
Yeah.
Right.
Do a nice tarantella. Sure.
That's going to be fun. So the first 40, 45 minutes will be some live music, and Shane's working on that. And then we'll come back and have a lot of fun roasting Tony, who at the end, as I explained to him, people have said, Tony is really sensitive. You sure he's going to be able to survive this? And I said, yeah, because at the end, he gets to hit everybody. He gets to hit back at everybody.
He'll be fine. From LaSalle. Italian from LaSalle, thick skin. Come on. He's not that sensitive.
So please circle the date of Thursday, September 27th. We also are inching towards the return of Andrea Romolo, who's about to release an album of Leonard Cohen songs,
exactly.
Which was basically spawned at the Last Waltz 40th anniversary when she and Gavin Gardner and the Wooden Sky got together as people were leaving the theater. They thought it was finally over. Leonard had just passed away, and they did "Hey, That's No Way to Say Goodbye" impromptu.
Billy Bob, you never know when it's over.
That's right. And
only when the lights come out, and then still, it might not be.
And they rehearsed for maybe 4 minutes backstage before they went out, and it was a great moment. And you saw Gavin in the Wooden Sky recently.
Yeah, Tupper said, "Why don't you come down? I had a 3-day window, and he said the Wooden Sky's playing." So I got up as early as I could Sunday morning, coming down, got into the
Jeep.
Got
your cleanest dirty shirt.
Got my cleanest dirty shirt, and rolled down. Yeah, and I caught the second half of the show. And they were great, 4-piece. And beautiful songs, beautiful songwriter.
Yeah, he's a great dude. And
he's a super nice guy. Yeah. I said, because I didn't want to go out, because I didn't know if he remembered me from the show. And Tup said, no, he knows you. He knows that he remembers you, you know, and went over and just said, hey. And yeah, super nice guy. High likability factor. You know what I mean?
Yes.
He's
just a nice dude.
Yeah.
And he's tall.
Which is nice. He's tall.
So I was mentioning the Jazz Fest. Mm-hmm. Saw Angel Forest perform outside with your buddy Alec McElkrin on bass. That's as good as I've seen Angel. Something. Yeah, there's a whole other level when she's outdoors.
Yeah?
Yeah, that was
the hippie in her.
An amazing set. And saw Steve Hill do his one-man band thing.
Sure.
And who else did I see? Inside. Oh, I saw Rob Lutz. The first thing I saw at the Jazz Fest was Rob Lutz and Rob McDonald. And then Rob McDonald was sitting behind me, finally got to see Ry Cooder perform. He had never played Montreal, as far as I know. It's the first time a lot of us got to see him. And
I was gigging. How was the show?
Every musician in town, every time I turned around before the show and at intermission, there was another musician that I knew. It was amazing. It was one of the great shows I've seen. In my life. Part of it was the fact that it was Ry Cooder, and I had never seen him before. It's so cool to have somebody in such command of an audience without putting on a show. You know what I mean?
Like, sure.
He's got the stage. He's got everybody eating out of his hand. He's got a tune-up. He said, you know, this one's a little hard to play. And then he'd say, the last one was hard to play. This one's really hard to play. And he'd pull it off. It was just, he would be tuning, and people didn't care. You know, it's like, we know it's worth the extra 2 minutes. Yeah. And he may not have an electrifying stage presence, but it's all about the music.
Mm-hmm.
And it was
which
tremendous.
Is rare.
And he's got a new album called The Prodigal Son. We played something off it the last time, and I'd like to get to this. It may or may not fit into the theme of what we're doing here on the podcast. But that's what great music does. That's what great art does, right? Beauty's in the eye of the beholder. I think you'll recognize this classic as covered by Ry Cooder. Very unique and distinct cover.
In my home, I got a Bible in my home. If I don't read, my soul will be lost. Mm-hmm. And it's nobody's fault but mine. Now my mother taught me how to pray. My mother taught me how to pray, yeah. I don't pray, my soul will be lost. Nobody's fault but mine. Jesus taught me what to do, and Buddha taught me what to do. If I don't do right, my soul will be lost. Nobody's fault but mine. I don't blame nobody.
From the Prodigal Son, Ry Cooder's latest studio album, and that's what he was touring in support of, which brought him to the Montreal Jazz Fest for the very first time, and really one of the great nights of music I ever experienced. It was actually Howard Billiman of Hotel Two Tango who invited me. He said, Ry Cooder's coming to town, when tickets went on sale all those months ago, and I said, oh, God, yes, was there with Chris Vellon and Steve Herskovitz, two longstanding members of the Hotel 2 Tango Recording Studio All-Stars, who will also be performing a very special Billy Bob Productions event down the road. I don't want to say anything more, but it's going to be a very special event. It's probably going to be a fundraiser for a good friend, Dan Byrne. You've played that, Zeppelin's. You've played that?
I played not particularly that song, but that in that style, Blind Willie Johnson, who was famous for Dark Was the Night, Cold Was the Ground, which is a big influence on a lot of slide guitar players. Mm-hmm. Jesus, Make Up My Dying Bed, who was covered by your main man, right? Bob Dylan?
He covered
Jesus, Make Up My Dying Bed?
No, not that I'm aware of.
What's on the first album?
On the Jesus album, Slow Train Coming?
No, one of his first albums.
Oh, way back when, the very first album.
See, now you got me second guessing myself.
I don't think. Let's see, man. There's a lot of traditional blues songs on there. Let Me Die in My Footsteps, is that on there? You sang at our. What was the song you sang at the Petit Campus Crazy Night? You did a very early Dylan cover that night.
I think it was that one. Jesus, Make Up My Dying Bed.
I think you got the title. I think the lyric is right, but I don't think that's the title of the song.
Okay.
But anyway.
Anyway, so Jesus, Make Up My Dying Bed, Dark Was the Night, Cold Was the Ground, and Nobody's Fault But Mine. So, spooky stuff. Spooky stuff.
Well, what's the Zeppelin song that you play slide on?
Traveling Riverside Blues.
That's the one.
That's, okay. Yeah. Robert Johnson. I also did John the Revelator, which is a famous spiritual. A lot of people cover that.
Okay. Now, I cannot continue and wrap this up without going back to Dylan's first album.
Wikipedia Challenge.
Released in 1962.
Pray for me, ladies and gentlemen.
Because that's definitely not the title.
Even if you're an atheist, just pray for me so I get this one right. I can't be wrong.
How old was Bob Dylan when he died?
How old was Bob Dylan when he died?
This is what comes up when
oh, my God.
Yeah. I just want Bob Dylan's first album, man.
Okay. Hey, man. I just want Dylan's first album, man.
All right, Bob Dylan's first album, self-titled. I'm going to give you the album songs. It's only 37 minutes.
Please, ladies and gentlemen, please.
Track listing. You're No Good. Talking to You. Or In My Time of Dying.
Shit.
That's it.
Ah!
In My Time. And you played that. Yeah. In My Time of Dying.
So close.
Yeah. Man of Constant Sorrow. Fixin' to Die. Pretty Peggy-O. Highway 51 Blues. Gospel Plow. Baby, Let Me Follow You Down. House of the Rising Sun. Freight Train Blues. Song to Woody, one of the rare actual originals on his first album. And See That My Grave Is Kept Clean.
That's the one, too.
Blind Lemon Jefferson.
Ugh.
Yeah.
I was close.
So, yeah, I knew what
my
you meant.
My dad told me, you know what close is good for? Waltzing and hand grenades.
You know what other show you would have really loved? There was two other shows you would have loved at Jazz Fest. Ben Harper with Charlie Musselwhite.
Mm-hmm.
Ben Harper was playing... Lap Steel.
Wiesenborn and Lap Steel, yeah.
And he's got I'm not a big, I got to admit, I'm not a big Ben Harper fan.
Okay.
I've seen him. And it's just, but you take his sweetness of a voice.
You mean it's too sweet for you?
No, it's just there's something, I don't know, the songwriting. Yeah, it's just he hasn't, I've tried because everybody said you should love Ben Harper.
Sure.
And I'm sorry, I don't. But then you put him together with the dirty, filthy Chicago blues of Charlie Musselwhite, then it becomes a very special night.
Right on.
And they also covered Zeppelin that night. That was a great show. And Boss Skaggs is 75 years old. Honestly, when he came onto the stage in his traditional, you know, fashionable shirt over his jeans, he looked 20 years younger. And he sounds amazing. He had a tremendous band with him, including Willie Weeks on bass.
Oh, my God.
And it was just an incredible night, Boss Skaggs.
Awesome.
And I also saw Thorogood, who I had seen enough back in the day. And
I've never seen him live.
I don't have to see George Thorogood again, right? And it was that crazy Sunday. It was about 37 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have AC. You've been coping okay? Do you have AC?
No.
What do you
do? I have an industrial fan pointed right at me. Earplugs.
Yeah.
So I turn it on. It's like... And then when I put the earplugs in, and it's. And I then that I'm fine.
I have two cats, and the cats are listless, right? So I rub them with ice cubes and trying to keep them cool.
And rub them with ice cubes.
Oh yeah, their whole body, they like it. It cools them off. Are you kidding?
You get their fur all wet.
So.
Why don't you just have a nice little cool bath for them?
Well, the water, running water in cats is not a good thing. You didn't? Okay. No. You want to see a cat freak out?
Yeah. Some cats like it.
No.
Okay.
Not. I've been a cat owner my entire life. Not one cat that I've had. Even if you turn the tap on to give them new, fresh water, if it's too close,
no
freak
go.
Out. Yeah. So I was looking for either a movie or a concert to go to, and I saw that Thurgood was playing at the Jazz Fest. So I said, it's time to see Thurgood again. And I had a good seat. I walked in. I got a third row seat. And it was a good show. It was a lot of fun. I drink alone, bat to the bone.
Madison
he's 68
Blues.
Years old, and he looks great. He's an old ball player. He was a minor league ball player.
Okay.
And he's got the body of an athlete at his age. He can still run around. It was a fun night. It's like every Montrealer should
it's
see
feel good.
George Thurgood at least.
A lot of motorcycle boots, a lot of leather vests.
And then at the end of
Harley Davidson t-shirts.
Do you know this?
Abuela Grosju. Sorry.
R.L. Boyce was the last thing I saw at the Jazz Fest. He played on the blues stage in Mississippi, old Mississippi blues style guy.
Okay.
But it was a great Jazz Fest, and it was cool to see you on that stage.
Yeah.
I wish you could play
balls right away. Right away, I'm sound checking. I look up. And I look at you and I see your smiling face. And I forget what you said, but it was like.
You were bending over.
Just like, yeah.
You were bending over and Lloyd and I were standing there watching you. And I said something about not, you know, keeping your balance.
Hey, don't fall over or something.
But you all saw, I'm up, sure you saw a lot
about
of.
About to play for like 30,000 people.
You
my
saw
dear
a lot
friend,
of familiar faces.
Mitchie
right?
Melnick with the ball busting right away. Yeah, yeah.
Wasn't that Natasha Hall was right in front of the stage with her husband?
Yes. They were very nice and very encouraging. Oh, my God.
Yeah. So what do you got coming up?
Just working on the tunes, studio, and staying close to home. I got writers at Woody Point in the middle of August.
Oh, how many years now is this?
That's
this is Stephen Brunt's
year.
Festival. This is the 10th year you're going. Do you know anybody else who's playing when you're there?
I haven't looked yet. No, I haven't looked. It's funny. I never check it out, and I just go and I know.
Have you
ever
not
that,
had
I
a
know,
good time?
One time, the eighth year, I didn't have a good time. But we'll do the weed podcast, and I told you that story.
Yeah,
I ate the brownie.
Yes,
and it was terrible. I'll never eat a weed brownie, and I'm not a big joint guy. Like I'll smoke weed, maybe. I don't know, four times a year if it's around, and it's always a bad decision, and I regret my choices and the paranoia. And so I was with a dear friend of mine, and he likes to partake, and he's a professional partaker. And he's like, yeah, you know, me and the boys have been making some hash oil and this and that. And I was like, okay, you know, whatever, people got to do their thing. But I didn't get it. He showed me a case of like 12 mason jars filled with hash oil. So I was like, but at this point I had had like five rum and cokes, and I was like, it's a Friday night, I had it off, all I had to do was play Saturday night. And so I had five rum and cokes, took a hit off a joint, and then he said, and it's just me and him in the cabin in the woods, and he's like, do you want to eat a brownie? And I never eat brownies. And he opened the door, and there's this pan of brownies, and as the light hit the brownie pan, there was like this green golden sheen floated across the top, and I'm like, brownies are supposed to be brown, but they were like light sandy, not normal brownie color. Anyway, so I take this piece about the size of my thumb, and in about an hour I'm on like a rocket ship, and shit's going wrong fast. Like he's playing me songs that he's recorded, and he's a brilliant musician, right? But I'm having a existential moment about being a musician, and my face is frozen in this like rictus where I'm like, I gotta give up the guitar, I gotta stop music, because this is like every note just sounded amazing, and I'm like, what am I doing with my life? And that was the beginning of like a 10-hour trip, and I was staying in his living room on the pull-out couch, and every time someone went up, you know, he or his wife went up to go to the bathroom, right, and I'm tripping balls, so I hear the door like I'm like, oh, oh. And my heart's pacing. And then the door, the toilet would flush. And I'm like, oh, yeah. And I didn't know where I was. Anyway, so I'm super, like, worn out, hungover. I haven't slept all night. And now, Stephen Brent knows this story now. And Stephen was kind enough to have me back for year number 9. Anyways, you know, sometimes I'm a rock and roll guy. So we get a drive up the coast. And I'm, like, beaten to pieces. I'm, like, jittery. It's, like, the worst hangover. And I got on stage and it's like, we're sound checking and it's hot and I couldn't stop sweating. And then I started like having a few rum and cokes to try hair the dog and that didn't help. And yeah, so that was,
Brunt asked me,
I know,
innocently, he said, anything up with Shane? And I said, well, yeah, he had he was going through emotional turmoil.
You spilled the beans. He wasn't going through emotional turmoil. You spilled the beans.
No, I didn't.
I tell you, she initially, when you told him something.
No, initially I said you were going through like a breakup and he was having a tough time, which made sense on his end.
That's true.
And then at the last waltz, I decided to fill in the blanks.
Spill the beans, yeah. He's going through emotional turmoil. He's breaking up.
And he's
grown man. He's eating weed brownies the night before the show for your festival in Newfoundland. He's getting high with the buys. But but I'll never do that again.
Were you ever really, really drunk at an important gig?
Really drunk. Yeah, I mean, there have been periods in my life where I was gigging a lot and playing at bars and trying to pay my nut and so it becomes a bit of a crutch, you know, those that beer and those two shots of Jameson turn into, you know, 7 shots of Jameson over the course of the night and, you know, 2 beers turns into 6 beers and so I was going through that stage and I forget who it was I was opening for. It was in my early 30s. I remember I had to go up on stage. And I was like, oh, shit, I overdid it, you know? But the
talent kicks in.
No, the adrenaline kicks in. And the reps kick in. The talent is, you know, the talent is the talent. But thank God it's you know, I've done it enough where the muscle memory is there and you can make it through. But it wasn't the best decision. But it's a big club. You know, a lot of people have gotten to... inebriated on stage, but it was a weird stage. I was playing at the same club all the time and the PA was just like brutal and it had like one speaker and it was like farting out all the time and I was playing like, but the guy gave me a bunch of dates and he was a sweetheart and he's like, you know, and he had kids and stuff and he's like, yeah, Murph, don't worry, we're gonna change the PA next week and we're gonna change the PA next week and next week and next week and I'm just like hating my life, you know. But yeah, too much.
Because not everybody makes it through. There's a lot of people who have...
Yeah, you got to watch it. I mean, I never...
been done in by the bottle.
Yeah, and cocaine, and usually...
in music. Well, that's another podcast.
We're going to do the... Really? We're going to do the Yale?
We're going to go... We're going to do the marijuana. We've got alcohol.
Kilo
this
Shane.
One. Marijuana for number 14. Narcos. And then into the coke for number... 15.
No, I never got on the blow. I never got on into weed.
It's just destructive. Cocaine is just destructive.
I don't like it. I just like the
but
way
so
it smells.
Is alcohol.
I just you like know, the way it smells.
That's the. I remember watching, like vodka. I remember watching the movie. The first time I had seen the movie The Doors, was in Florida at a fantasy camp with Bill Lee and his then wife Pam, his second wife, and Aaron Rand. We were all in the hotel room. And Bill is watching all this stuff take place on a beach in L.A. where he grew up. He was born in Burbank. And he's doing Tai Chi to Jim Morrison doing Tai Chi on the beach and in one of the early scenes. And he's going, you know, a lot of this is my life. I said, you didn't do as many drugs as Morrison did, Bill, did you? He goes, no, but what was the drug that killed Jim Morrison? And I know a lot of people would say heroin. But it was alcohol. He ballooned up after the arrest in Miami. He got very puffy. He grew the beard. It was. He was a bad drunk. He was a really mean.
But wasn't
bad
that
drunk.
A combination of alcohol and barbiturates?
Yes, and other stuff. But it was alcohol. Bill was making the point that it was the alcohol was the real downer, and that's what did him in, and that's what does in a lot of people.
Well, I mean, it's for me. I mean, alcohol is the best thing and the worst thing, right? If you take it too far. The next day you're hungover and you're, oh, what did I do? And if That's the biggest thing I find.
If
you black out or you say something stupid or you get too mouthy or, but if you're, you know, some people are really good drinkers, you know, people who can just have, you know, two scotch or two beers, three beers, or people who can.
Oh, I could drink a bottle of whiskey, scotch, good scotch.
Right.
Back and in the day, and especially.
You don't lose.
No, I drink a lot of water. As long as it's good scotch, you know, it's never been an issue. The problem is the shots and mixing. And the biggest thing that I find now is just I can't do it. I don't enjoy the next day, or it's actually the second day.
Yeah.
It's not a good place when you're pushing 60. You can't do it. You just can't do it. So you pick your spots. And certainly the Jazz Fest and the Comedy Fest, those are two of the spots that you pick.
Yeah. For me, it's the anxiety and the fear. The next thing, I mean, obviously the physical stuff, the headache and all that stuff, but you're in a bad place and you don't know why. And then you start ordering poutine and pizza to make yourself feel better.
Well, we're going out with a couple of drinking songs here. I hope you enjoyed the Melnick and Murphy podcast from CNS Studios in Western NDG.
West Side.
Thanks to Tony Colgan and Alan Hodgson. And, of course, Lorne Rubin of Paramount Financial Services, our main sponsor. And if you're looking for someone to take good care of your money, Lorne is the guy to do it. You give him a call at 514-905-0876. We're kind of pulling an audible here, Tony. We're going to go right to Lucinda Williams, and then we're going to go with, since we mentioned Alejandro Escovedo, one of his classic songs is I Was Drunk, and that's how we'll be finishing the show. Lucinda Williams, Car Wheels on a Gravel Road. There was a beloved figure in Austin. His name was Blaze Foley. He was a singer-songwriter, very good friends with Townes Van Zandt. In fact, he wrote Clay Pigeons that John Prine covered, but he had an issue with the bottle, as immortalized by Lucinda Williams in Drunken Angel. Thanks for listening to the Melnick and Murphy podcast, episode 13.
You're on the other I was drunk, I was down, I was wandering around my bed. I was drunk, I was down, I was wandering around my bed. I called out your name. Call out your name. I was bleeding, I was exhausted, I was suffering from the altitude. Picked up your scent, lost it, then I suffered from your attitude. And called out your name. Call out your name. Call out your name. Call out your name. I was summoned by the angels to be hung beside your picture. Not allowed to feel, to touch, to hold, forever imprisoned and lost.